I want you to look again at this morning, verse 9 of this text. You'll notice the Apostle Paul reminds us of one of the great foundational principles of the Christian life and the New Testament church. He says, "For a great door and effectual is open unto me, and there are many adversaries." In other words, the Apostle Paul, in this first letter to Corinth, is explaining to the Christians there why he's sort of running a little late. He'd like to be there before the winter. He had planned to be there after going through Macedonia, and he hoped to be there after Pentecost, but no sooner. Why? Well, read it again, verse 5. "Now I will come unto you when I shall pass through Macedonia, for I do pass through Macedonia. And it may be that I will abide, yea, and winter with you, that ye may bring me on my journey whithersoever I go. For I will not see you now, by the way, but I trust to tarry a while with you if the Lord permit." Now verse 8. "But I will tarry at Ephesus until Pentecost." What's he saying, Pastor? Well, he's telling them that the reason he won't be at Corinth until later is that he has decided to stay a little while there at Ephesus. And why Ephesus? Why would he choose to tarry in one of the most pagan, darkened cities in all of the Roman Empire? Verse 8. "But I will tarry at Ephesus until Pentecost, for a great door and effectual is opened unto me, and there are many adversaries." I want to speak this morning on the subject, seeing the door first. You see, folks, understand that the city of Ephesus was no bed of roses for any child of God. The Temple of Diana, one of the wonders of the ancient world with all of its immoral and godly associations, plus the political climate of idolatry and greed leading to a great riot and threat, remember, against the Apostle Paul. The historical context where in Ephesus was a refuge city for criminals who could not be arrested for any crime within a bowshot of its walls. So there's crime, idolatry, immorality, greed. In every way, this was a place for Christians, believers, to avoid. And you know what? Paul would have avoided it except for one thing. God opened a door. Now, wait a minute. When Paul looked at this city of Ephesus, he saw something. He saw all of the adversaries. He saw what we just mentioned. He saw all of the evil, the oppositions, the risks, and the challenges. He saw the evil. In the last part of verse 9, what does he say? He says, there are many adversaries, and he saw all of them. However, as the text shows, he saw the open door first. Let's pray. Father, please help us. Please help us to open our hearts and minds to exactly what you have for us today. And I pray, Father, that whatever message is meant for each believer in this room, for each unsaved person in this room, it will not be lost on them, that you will help us to hear what the Spirit says. Please, in Jesus' precious name, amen. Three lessons I want you to notice in today's text that in a multitude of ways are extremely appropriate for this very day and age. And the first, the most obvious lesson, I think, is number one, a lesson of opportunity. Look at verse 9 again. He says, "For a great door and effectual is opened unto me." Now, folks, I want us to think about something very carefully with this matter of opportunities that maybe aren't so obvious. Ephesus, as we've already noted, was not at all a fun place for any child of God, for any child of the living God. No believer would deliberately and or arbitrarily just move his family or himself to the city of Ephesus. It was a tourist destination in those days for Greeks and Romans who came to Ephesus specifically for the pleasures of the goddess of fertility. It was full of vice and immorality and indulgence, so that what happened in Ephesus stayed in Ephesus, except that they weren't even ashamed or embarrassed of it. And so when Paul says that he saw an open door to that place, it's very important to notice the language of how he says it, because what the language shows is that Paul is not the one who opened this door. Paul didn't do this door opening business. God did. Not only that, it also shows that God opened that door specifically for and to Paul. Read it again, verse 9. "For a great door and effectual is opened unto me. In other words, Paul isn't saying, hey, I got us an in. I knocked it open. I got us an in to this vile city, and it took some work, but we're there. And I want everybody, just bring your kids and your teenagers and your family to this wide open city, and let's see what's happening. No, Paul makes it clear that he's staying in Ephesus because God opened that door for him. Hold your place and turn about a page or two ahead, which in chapter 2 of 2 Corinthians. Because I want you to notice what Paul says about another city called Troas and then Macedonia. Chapter 2, verse 12 of 2 Corinthians says, furthermore, when I came to Troas to preach Christ's gospel, and a door was opened unto me of the Lord. You know, Jesus said in Revelation 3:8, behold, I have set before thee an open door that no man can shut. Understand, God opens the doors and only God can shut the doors. Now, folks, let me ask you a question. If God is the one who opens the doors of opportunity, then what does that alone tell all of us in this room? Well, folks, it tells us that the only reason that there is a Bible-believing church in St. George in Quebec, Canada, is not because Carl Bernard opened the door. God did. He walked through it. The only reason why a young man who was saved here at Beacon Baptist Church is in Northern Wales to see fruit for the kingdom of God is not because he opened the door, it's because God opened the door. In other words, this church here in Jupiter isn't brought to you by the Southern Baptist Convention or the Baptist Bible Fellowship or the Blaylocks or the good folks at Westside Baptist Church. Oh, no, no. The opportunity and the open door right now in Clayton, North Carolina, isn't there because of Pastor Charlie Hatcher. It is there. God opens all of these doors, and that's why. No matter where you are, no matter where you live or serve as a child of God, always, always, always see the door first. Pastor, I don't know about this election, this area, this culture, what's happening. Okay, let me ask you this. Has God opened a door still for his people? Then you see the door first. And thus relish this God-given opportunity. Think about it, folks. If God opens a door of opportunity, basically doing this. Someone opens a door and they basically do this. If God opens a door for you or for us, if that's true and you know the doorkeeper, then what else matters? Well, I don't know what's behind that door. He does. You know, this text in 2 Corinthians 2, did you notice the mention of Troas there? And did you see in the very next verse, it says he went from thence to Macedonia. You know why? That's because in Troas, he received the Macedonian call and took the gospel west. Even though, let me remind you, in his mind, Paul wasn't supposed to be in Troas. His plans were to be way north of an Asia in Bithynia, according to Acts 16. He essayed or tried or planned to go there. He wanted an open door up there. He looked for an open door up there. He even expected an open door up there. But you know what? God never provided one. Not yet and not there. It's a reminder, beloved, that being in service to God in any place, being with a New Testament church at any time in history, being a believer under any circumstances, that's not just an opportunity, ladies and gentlemen. That is a great opportunity. In our main text in chapter 16, if you look at it again, you see the word great there? A great door? It's the Greek word mega. You know the reason why Paul calls it a great door, why he calls this a great opportunity? It's not because of the logistics. It's not because of the climate or the economy or the politics or the expected reception. It's great only because, ladies and gentlemen, God himself opened it. You know, I was watching the Cubs in Game 6, the NLCS, last night, and they showed all the fans, you know, on the rooftops outside in front of Wrigley Field and on Waveland Avenue. And, you know, my mind went back to the 1970s. And I must have passed by Wrigley Field a couple hundred times in those 5+ years. And what I remember was that almost always you could get tickets out front for next to nothing after the fourth inning. And especially on those hot summer days, before they ever put lights at Wrigley Field. And every year they would finish under 500. And sometime past July, you could be sure that the scalpers would practically give the tickets away. But you know what? Not last night. The first World Series for the Cubs since 1945. Marlins man, he paid a lot of money for that usual seat behind home plate. You know why? Because people sensed this opportunity. People saw the value of this major league open door. It was a mega door, especially for Cubs fans. And yet the fact remains, it's still just baseball. It's still a game that ultimately affects nobody's eternity. Not so with this open door. Because when God opens a door, it is a great door. So that, you know what I say? If people can get that excited about a baseball opportunity, how much more should we see the doors that God opens as mega opportunities? There's an old expression that says, grow where you're planted. If you're a believer in this room today, rest assured you have been planted. And in these United States of America in 2016, and this fall, a great door is open unto you and unto me. The only question is, will we embrace this opportunity, and will we do so with wisdom? In Auburn, East Tennessee, there was an old fellow who passed away. His name was Bubba. It was back in the hills of Tennessee where money was scarce. And so Bubba's wife went to the newspaper to put in his obituary. Unfortunately, she only had $2, and the cost for obituaries was $1 per word. So she just put two words. Bubba died. The editor of the paper felt really bad about that, and so he gave her another $3, so at least she could say a little bit more in her late husband's memory. So you know what she did? She wrote down, the obituary now said, Bubba died, boat for sale. You know what that is? That's taking an opportunity with wisdom, right? Paul said, I'm going to stay here in Ephesus for a while because a great door is open unto me. It wasn't always open. Remind you of where this was. This is in Asia. I essayed to go to Bithynia. It was closed at one time. It brings us then to the second thing of the text. We said, number one, there's a lesson of opportunity. The second thing you'll notice, number two, there's a lesson of opposition. Verse 9 again. For a great door and effectual is opened unto me, and there are many adversaries. By the way, wouldn't you have written this statement a little different? I mean, wouldn't we typically say, for a great door and effectual is opened unto me, but there are many adversaries? I mean, that'd be the usual reference to adversaries in our language. But with Paul, you notice he almost makes the adversaries part of the open door. So it seems as if he looks at those adversaries like an eagle looks at a headwind, just something to get them off the ground. Verse 9 again. For a great door and effectual is open unto me, and there are many adversaries. In other words, when Paul saw the adversaries, he saw them not as a reason to leave Ephesus, but actually as a reason to stay there. Why? Why this amazing perspective? Because, ladies and gentlemen, he saw the door first. What he saw first was God saying this. And opening the door, you know, when the soldiers went house to house in Iraq, they knew that behind that door there might be adversaries. They didn't say, well, then we shouldn't go. They said, then we should go. And there are many adversaries. First, he saw God open that door, and then he saw the adversaries on the other side of it. And yes, beloved, it is a reminder that Christians who follow Christ will always find and meet opposition. Every door that God opens for us, every door that God opens for you, every door that God opens for Beacon Baptist Church, he opens down here. Pastor, say that again? All right. Every door that God opens down here, he opens down here. What does that mean? That means when he opens a door down here, it's not a door to heaven. It's not a door to paradise. It's not a door to glory. It's a door to Ephesus. It's a door to Colossae. It's a door to Smyrna. It's a door to Rome. So that, in other words, it is a door to a place full of sinners and problems and liars and thieves and unbelievers and scorners and enemies of the cross, as Paul once called them. You know, I was little. My mom used to watch a show called Let's Make a Deal. It was hosted back then by Monty Hall. And of course, I suppose, like the modern version, he would have these three doors with prizes behind them. And so for the big deal, if they got that far, behind one of those doors, typically there was a new car or something like that. So what will it be, Mrs. Smith? What's behind door number one, door number two, or door number three? And she says, I pick door number, and the crowd screaming the doors for her. I pick door number two. And they open the door, and instead of a car, it's a goat. Literally, a billy goat tied up with a rope. Can I tell you something? Do you know that behind every door of opportunity that God opens, there is almost entirely nothing but goats? Lost people. Needy people. Broken people. This choir sang it a moment ago, people need the Lord. And also, behind every door God opens, there are deceived people. And with deception comes great opposition. And so Paul says, there's a great open door unto me. And looky there, there are many adversaries on the other side of that door. You know, the FBI once asked the notorious Willie Sutton, the famous bank robber, why? I mean, the agents just said, why do you rob banks, Willie? And remember his answer? He said, the reason I rob banks is because that's where the money is. You know, the reason God opens a door to a place like Ephesus is that that's where the sinners are. This is where the needs are. And yes, that's also where the adversaries are. You say, well, Pastor, I just don't believe that when God opens a door, there should be problems or trials or opposition or struggles. For me, an open door means, you know, smooth sailing and respectability in town. You know, once in a while, that may be true. But what was the very next thing that Paul said after his open door in Troas? Look at it again. 2 Corinthians 2. Here it is. 2 Corinthians 2, verse 12. Furthermore, when I came to Troas to preach Christ's gospel, and a door was open unto me of the Lord, I had so much peace and joy and prosperity and health and wealth. No, it says, I had no rest in my spirit because I found not Titus my brother. In other words, Paul, think about this, listen, Paul walked through the door that God had opened. And instantly, when he walked through the door that God had opened, things were not according to plan. Titus was not there. And instantly, he says, I was troubled. And that's the open door. If you're wondering what kind of adversaries Paul's speaking of in Ephesus, all you have to do, right next to our original text in 1 Corinthians 16, is write a reference. Just write down Acts chapter 19, because in that one chapter, you will read about Ephesus and the chief priests and the seven sons of Siva and Demetrius, the silversmith, and all of the idol craftsmen and the worshipers of Diana and the head of their Rotary Club and that famous theater. In other words, know this, essentially Paul's adversaries included the religious leaders, the banks, the unions, the entertainers, and the university. In other words, Democrats. I'm just kidding. Actually, all of them. Democrats. It included everybody who was without the gospel. In fact, if you want to see how Paul describes his Ephesus adversaries, look at chapter 15 of 1 Corinthians right across the page. And notice what he says in verse 32. If, after the manner of men, I have fought with beasts at Ephesus. That's his description of his adversaries. Now, wait a minute. This is an open door that Paul sees? This is the mega opportunity that God himself has provided for God's servant? Yes, beloved, opportunity always, always includes opposition. Back in the 1970s, I taught Bible in our high school in Knoxville. Louise was over the music department, so I had the joy of making doctrine exciting and fun for junior hires. It's impossible. It is. You know, every time we had an exam or a test and they moaned, I reminded them that we don't call them exams. I never used the word exam or test. I learned this from someone else. I always called it an OTE. It stands for opportunity to excel. So I said, kids, this Friday we have an OTE. You know what that is? That's an opportunity for you to excel. Well, apparently they told their parents about that because as an assistant pastor, I also made hospital visits. And on one of those visits, poor guy was just being taken from the room for endoscopy and a colonoscopy or something. And the nurse said, sir, you'll have to wait. He's got to go for an exam. And he said, Mr. Barlow said, actually, man, Brother Jim likes to call them opportunities to excel. So I said, go excel, my brother. Did you know that adversaries for Paul were opportunities as well? And they are for every child of God. It brings us to the third lesson of the text, the opportunity, number two, the opposition, number three, and finally, I want you to notice the optimism. I love what he says, verse 9 again, for a great door and effectual is open unto me. Do you know what the word effectual means? The Greek word is energes, from which we get the word energy. And what Paul is testifying to is that when God opens the door, there's power behind it. There is energy, there is force, there is strength. In other words, anytime you go through a door that God opens, you never go alone. You always go through a door that he opens with him and with his help. Now, you still have adversaries. You still have troubled spirits as Paul. You still meet great opposition. You still stand as a light in a very dark world. But the good news is, your light is really his light. Your effort is really his effort. I mentioned the Greek word Paul uses, energes, right? Let me read to you what it says in the Greek lexicon. Quote, energes, from ernegao, to energize, working in a situation, bringing it from one stage to the next, like an electrical current energizing a wire, bringing it to a shining light bulb. In other words, it is a great and effectual door. Because when you walk through, so does the light of the world in the gospel of Christ. It is not your energy. It's his in you. For we have this treasure in earthen vessels. God always has a purpose for the open door. Beloved, all we have to do is see the door first and embrace that opportunity. You know, this election, this nation, this dark political landscape in Washington, people in America, I suppose, have never been so cynical and skeptical and justifiably shaken as they are right now today. Every leaked email and tape and secret document shows more and more and deeper corruption at higher and higher levels, the deceit in the seats of power. And people are really losing faith in their institutions around them in this country. For the believer, all that presents is an open door. All of it is an opportunity for us to excel. But Pastor, people! I know, people need the Lord. And you know the Lord. You know, I mentioned the Macedonian call. Paul tried to go to Bithynia. It was closed. He came down to Troas. He got the Macedonian call and said, come over and help us. And so he went over. And do you remember the language of what happened? The very first person. There were adversaries there as well. Just follow Paul along his missionary journeys. And when he got to a town, the first thing he did was check into jail, pretty much. But it was an open door. He walked through that door and he had a convert. The first one. It says, and a certain woman named Lydia, a seller of purple of the city of Thyatira, which worshipped. He went down to their little prayer meeting area. It says, whose heart the Lord opened that she attended unto the things which were spoken of Paul. Isn't that beautiful? God opened the door to the West, and he opened the door to one woman's heart. You know, every missionary we've had in this missionary month, virtually everyone has a Lydia. This was my first convert. This was the first person we saw open their heart and faith to Christ. Were there struggles? Yes. Were there adversaries? Were there oppositions? Were there enemies? Were there problems? Were there times that, like Paul, I had no peace? I was troubled, and of course. But there's Lydia. And there's those in Ephesus that took their idols and burned them in the fire as they opened their heart to faith in Jesus Christ. God has given Beacon Baptist Church an open door. Oh, but Pastor, this and that. There are many adversaries, but always see the door first. At work, oh, I got this opposition and that. Always see the door first. If God has done this, then what does it really matter? What's behind that door? Because eventually and ultimately there will be victory. Father, bless the invitation. We commit it into your hands. Thank you, dear God. Thank you for all the times we can look past our lives and see that you've opened a door of great opportunity. May we understand it's also to be a door of great optimism, because the gates of hell shall not prevail against your church. And so staying and going forward and doing your will. For these who've asked for prayer, draw them to you, Father. If somebody who raised their hand, or many who didn't, are not saved, may they be convicted by your grace. Bless this service, please, in Jesus' name.
On behalf of everyone at Beacon Baptist Church, we thank you for joining us today. Our prayer is that your heart and life has been impacted through the biblical truths of this message. If you have questions or would like more information, please contact us through our website at beaconbaptistchurch.org. That's beaconbaptistchurch.org. May the Lord bless you.